recording.
Good morning from the Department of Communications. You are welcome. We're going to introduce ourselves so that you know who we are. We are the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. I'm Priscilla Temba, the chairperson of the committee. And like I said, you are more than welcome to come and give us information. Today what will happen, you will do the presentation. Then we will have, if there are questions for clarification, why the document, then we will do so, but we won't adopt this today. Today is just for information to the members, because it's our first meeting with you. So members will introduce themselves, and you will follow suit. I represent Mpumalanga province, the beautiful province, in the National Council of Provinces.
I'm Mabeja Lebohane, representing Limpopo, and I'm the member of the committee and the web.
I'm Herman Groenewald, a member of the committee, and I representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Zola Mbenzana, a member of the Select Committee representing the province of the Eastern Cape.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the honorable members present, and our researchers also present, and in the media. I wasn't quite sure. Oh, I see people sit on the side, so they are recording. We are usually followed by a guy called the IT web in DOC, so they always follow us. So.
Okay.
My name is Keith Buchalezi. I'm the Deputy Director General of International Relations and Trade on ICT in the Department of Communication. With me, I have my colleagues that will introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Jim Patterson. I'm the Director for Multilateral Relations in the Department of Communications. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Mantekele Monama, Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Department of Communications.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Fison Mabo. I'm the Executive Head for the Office of the Deputy Minister of the Papela.
Thank you very much. Can we start? Let's hear what do you have for us. What is the ratification of the final act of the ITU all about? Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Jim will do the overall presentation. I'll just give the overview background over this act. And also to emphasize some salient points. That way we are now, we are on the other side of the planning point, which is the Guadalajara, Mexico, planning point that was held very recently in December. And as South Africa, we've been given a seat once more. The very same day when we got the UN Security Council seat, we also won a seat on the ITU. So out of 157 countries that attended globally, we were voted by 101 countries worldwide. And second, we also we competed without AU endorsement. So South Africa competed on its own. So it's a great achievement on its own on the ITU. So the ratification process is based on Antalya, which is technically slightly outdated because we are now on Guadalajara. So would explain what it means to be where we are now. But the background of this final act dates back to 1992. I think that the constitution of the ITU looked at these matters as early as 1992 using the Geneva first process that occurred. It was amended by a planning report that occurred in Kyoto in 1994. Then the one that followed was the one in Minneapolis in 1998, which was a planning port again. And the one that followed that one was Marrakesh in 2002. And the one that followed Marrakesh was Antalya in 2006. And the one that followed Marrakesh is the one that we attended recently in Guadalajara, in Mexico. We also signed in South Africa. And interestingly enough, we are one of the few countries in Africa that has a cyber security police. So all these weekly media, they are happening. We are already one of the first countries in Africa, in the continent, that has worked on it. So in the conference itself, we are top of the town, kind of, in the planning point. So there's a greater expectation from South Africa around the cyber security and cyber crime policies that we are working on. So the JCPS cluster is working tirelessly on those issues. I thank you, Chair. I just wanted to keep that background so that you understand where Antalya links with Guadalajara. Yeah.
Thank you very much. You know, I forgot to know, understand who are the people at the back there with us. Because I remember PMG is no longer around. Let's hear, who are you?
PMG.
Are you PMG?
Yes.
Huh?
PMG.
Can you introduce yourself? Put the mic on.
I'm
PMG.
PMG is
still
around.
Quiz Vika, PMG.
No, but we were told that PMG is no longer around. That's why we are asking. Can you explain?
You came back, PMG. No, okay, we will find out. It's fine. We will find out, but we know that PMG is no longer. And unless if you are attached to the library,
yeah.
Just the understanding. If you are office, maybe your offices are still there. You are in the offices, but you are no longer existing.
Maybe
you are not aware. Okay.
Okay. Good morning, colleagues. Okay, so the presentation is on the ratification of the final act of the plenipotentiary conference of the International Telecommunications Union, which took place from the 6th to the 24th of November in Antalya in Turkey. Just to start quickly on a background to the International Telecommunications Union, it's the leading UN agency providing a platform for the governance of the information and communication technology sector. I should note also that it's the oldest UN agency, it's the oldest UN organization. It predates the actual establishment of the UN, but it became incorporated into the UN family as one of the specialist agencies of the UN. And I think we should also emphasize that it's essential for the governance of the communications sector, this body. So it's a very important body, which is taken very seriously by the member states. I think it has 191 or 192 members currently. And in the last plenipotentiary conference that took place now in Mexico, there were nearly 160 member states attending with over 2,000 delegates. So it's an organization that's taken very seriously by the international community because of the work it does in managing international communications. At the time of this, it was 191 member states. There were more than 700 sector members. These are private companies and other institutions that choose to join one of the sectors of the ITU, and they pay a subscription to do that. And the associate members is a slightly lesser status than a sector member. They join a particular study group within the ITU, and they pay to do that as well. There are three core sectors in the ITU. The radio communications sector, known as ITU-R, telecommunication standardization sector, which is ITU-T, and telecommunication development sector, that's the ITU-D sector. The plenipotentiary conference that we're looking at now, the final acts, it took place in Antalya from the 6th to the 24th of November. We signed the final acts, subject to approval by competent authorities, ultimately by Parliament.
You must explain also how you as the department, because you know we ratify this thing.
Yes.
And how they go down to, you know, after ratifying what happens, and how are the people, the public, being informed about these things, you must also tell us. Because we don't just want to ratify. And at the end of the day, the communities, the public, they are not aware of this thing. So at the end, after the presentation, tell us how are you going to take this forward after we have ratified. Because otherwise, we won't ratify if we don't have a plan. Thanks.
Okay. For us, the process of ratification is quite a long one. We have... Before we go to the conference, we have a number of preparatory meetings. Some of these are done with national stakeholders, and there are also some international meetings. For example, there will always be, for all of the major conferences of the ITU, an African regional preparatory meeting. Well, there'll be one for each region within the ITU, so we will have one as Africa. Sometimes we also meet as SADC countries. And those are really just to prepare and consult on national positions before we go there. Then we go through the process of the negotiation, because really the plenipotentiary conference is ultimately a very long negotiating process. And because you have many different interests and countries involved, and many different interpretations of language, because you operate with six languages within the UN system, those negotiations are really, very often, they can get down to line by line, dots and commas, and different interpretations of particular words. So it's a very long process. Then at the conclusion, countries are invited to sign the final acts, but the signing of those acts, it's not a legally binding process. You're just confirming that this is what we agreed here. But there is no effect in terms of international law, because this treaty has to be ratified. So we only really endorse it once we come back home and go through that process. And then in South Africa, the process that we're following now, we have to take this to the state law advisors. There's two. There's the one at the Department of Justice, and then the international one at the Department of International Relations. And they have to verify then that this treaty doesn't conflict with existing international treaties that South Africa is signatory to, and that it doesn't conflict with national legislation. And sometimes they'll ask us to consult particular departments before we take it forward. Then after that, we start preparing documentation to take the final acts through the government cluster system. So in this case, we go to the ICTS cluster. That's through that process, we consult the different departments. It gets to the DG level. Then it goes to the cabinet subcommittee, cabinets, and then cabinet will give approval, we hope, to take the final acts then to Parliament. And so far in this process, we've consulted with the portfolio committee, and we are now with the select committee. From there, we would go back to the sector and stakeholders and indicate what we want to do with these final acts, where we see the priorities going forward. We've been a little bit overtaken because we were late with this process, and we've been already now to Mexico for the more recent final acts. So we'll be coming with the new final acts soon, we hope, from Mexico, which will be the latest amendment to the Constitution and Convention and Resolutions. So the final act, as a document, it's revisions to the existing constitution and convention and general rules of the ITU, and it's also revisions to the resolutions of the ITU. So once something is in the discussed in the plenipotentiary conference, it's a priority for the work of the ITU. They can't avoid it. It's got the most high status within the ITU decision-making structure. So anything in here, we as member states can hold the ITU accountable if they haven't undertaken that. So for us, mostly we're more interested in the resolutions, and we follow particular strands of issues that take place. And those will be the things that we're looking to do nationally and internationally. Well, I was talking a bit now about the Constitution and Convention and the Plenipotentiary Conference. The key functions of the Plenipotentiary Conference is to look at the 4-year strategic and financial plans. Those are contained in the final act, and they reflect the priorities that are discussed for the work of the ITU. Is to elect the management of the ITU. This includes the Secretary General, the Deputy Secretary General, a director for each of the sectors. That's the offices that run the sectors. So you have a Telecommunications Development Bureau for ITUD, the Standardization Bureau for ITUT, and the Radio Communications Bureau for ITUR. The Plenipotentiary Conference also elects members of the Executive Council and the Radio Regulations Board. DDG Buthelezi just referred now to the fact that we were elected onto the ITU Council. In fact, we were re-elected, and we have been again. So that was part of our campaign for the Plenipotentiary Conference. As I indicated, the Chief State Law Advisor for the Department of Justice and the Chief State Law Advisor International have indicated that final action not in conflict with our national legislation, nor with our international treaty obligations. And the Chief State Law Advisor International indicated that the final act constitutes a binding international treaty, and therefore are subject to ratification by Parliament. This diagram doesn't really come out that well on the, screen. But it's the structure of, it indicates the structure of the ITU. It's basically what I've been referring to in terms of the sectors. We have the three sectors indicated in the middle row there, ITU, R, D, and T. At the top of the structure is the Plenipotentiary Conference. Then you have the Council to which South Africa has been elected. That meets at least twice a year, I think it is. Yes, I think it is a bit too small to read on the screen. I don't know if you can see it on the documentation better. Okay, so the council is overseeing the work of the ITU in between the plenipotentiary conferences. So it has a very important function. And there are 46 council members at this stage. Then it mentions here World Conference on International Telecommunications, just where the arrow is pointing there, just to the right of the council. That has only met, as far as I know, once. It met in 1988. And its role is to look at the international telecommunications regulations. But it's not convened on a regular basis. It's convened as per decision of, I think it's Plenipotentiary Conference decides when that should meet. And it has decided that there is going to be a World Conference on International Telecommunications next year because the international telecommunications regulations are out of date. Then you have the three sectors in the middle row, as I mentioned, just where the arrow is. Radio Communications Conference, the Telecommunications Standardization Assembly, and the Telecommunication Development Conference. Each of the sectors of the ITU has its own international conference to determine the work of that sector. So in South Africa, for example, in 2008, we hosted the last World Telecommunications Standardization Assembly, where we looked at international standards. The World Radio Conference will be meeting next year, 2012. That will be looking at the management of the international frequency spectrum and satellite orbits. And then the development conference, the World Telecommunication Development Conference, that took place last year, takes place just before the Plenipotentiary Conference, normally in the same year. And that's looking at the development of networks and capacity building and assistance to developing countries in the ITU and in the telecommunications sector. So for each of these sectors, you have a director and an office. And above them, you have the Secretary General of the ITU and the Deputy Secretary General of the ITU. These are all elected positions. So those are the executives of the ITU. The structure, well, I've indicated the structure there, but it's set out in Article 7 of the Constitution. I don't think I need to repeat that part. Okay, as I indicated, we were re-elected as a member of the Executive Council. There are 46 member states. The seats for the ITU Council are divided into different regions so that you can ensure that seats are distributed according to the number of countries in each region. At this point, Africa was the largest region. It had 13 seats. Antalya was also the first time that an African was elected to the post of Secretary General of the ITU. That was Mr. Hamadoun Touré of Mali. And it reflected a lot of unity and good organization within the Africa group, so that he was elected with quite a strong majority. I think the nearest rival to him was a German candidate. Article 1 of the Constitution deals with the purposes of the ICU, and these encompass international cooperation for improvement and rational use of telecommunications, fruitful cooperation and partnership between entities involved in activities of the Union with member states, technical assistance for developing countries, and the mobilization of resources and access to information. Development of technical facilities to improve the efficiency, usefulness, and availability of telecommunication services. Cooperation with other world and regional intergovernmental organizations and NGOs with respect to the role of telecommunications in the global information society and economy. The allocation of radio frequency spectrum bands and the allotment of radio frequencies, registration, orbital position of satellites, and avoiding the interference of radio frequencies between countries, and eliminating harmful interference between radio stations, and improving the use of radio frequency spectrum. And then international standardization of telecommunications, international cooperation and solidarity for the technical assistance to developing countries and the creation, development and improvement of telecommunications, harmonizing the development of telecommunication facilities, collaboration for affordable telecommunications, safety of life, the undertaking of studies and adopting of resolutions and recommendations and regulations, social projects for underserviced areas, and promoting activities, participation in the activities of the Union. So that really encompasses the mandate of the ITU and why it's in existence. Now, what we did was we looked at some of the key outcomes that we thought were important from the final acts of Antalya 2006. And these were some of the issues that were hotly debated, and they were some of the key issues that we were following. So that's why we highlighted these rather than going through the whole document. Because the document is not, as we indicated earlier, conflicting with any of our international treaties or national laws. So we thought it's better just to focus on the key things that were discussed. And one of these was, I mentioned earlier, International Telecommunications Regulation. This was last discussed in 1988. So this body of international law is very out of date. If you consider in this sector, the ICT sector, how much has changed since 1988? I don't even think there were cell phones then. So the sector has completely transformed since then, and these regulations are very, very out of date.
Cell phones came in 1992 in Paraguay.
Yeah. So it was agreed then, finally, and this was, it may sound strange, but this was quite a controversial subject, but it was agreed to review the international telecommunication regulations through the World Conference on International Telecommunications, which would be convened in 2012. And this is going to be a treaty-level conference. The ITRs deal with the definition of international telecommunication services, cooperation between countries and national administrations, safety of life and priority of telecommunications, and charging and accounting principles. The current ITRs, they're just 10, they're really just 10 short paragraphs. So out of this book, which is called International Telecommunication Regulations, I'll just give you an indication. That much is actually the content of those regulations. So I think one of the reasons why it was so controversial is because some of the more powerful countries are able to exercise more influence by the lack of regulation. Because it was really developing countries that we were pushing for this to happen. And since that point, actually, the discussions have been, because it's still under discussion now within ITU Council, and it was under discussion in the last 10th century conference, the debate is now really about what should be the scope of these regulations? Should they just stick with the existing articles that are in the regulations from 1988, or are we allowed to add other things? And one or two countries that are very influential and powerful are arguing that we should not be able to discuss anything that's not already in there. But that's not possible to implement because countries are going to come with their proposals, whatever anybody says. So
let's just give the example.
Put your mic on.
Let's just give an example. The so-called first world countries would influence an agenda where they'll put maybe, for instance, South Africa in region one, very deliberate. I think you have observed, all of you members, the argument on the debate on the digital migration, on the Brazilian standards and the European standards. They'll do that deliberately in such a way that they ensure that we sign, you get locked into a certain deal. Even when anything new comes in, we find ourselves locked because we've signed and ratified or put ourselves in a certain block of a region. And then when politics changes, technology changes, new things emerge that are at times cheaper than what we would normally get. We are locked into those kind of deals. So the ICUR agenda is actually centered around those issues of the routers, how many routers we have that go to South Africa, internet governance, which is controlled some in America through ICANN, you know, institute that is internet governance. So they try all the best they can to monopolize and have a power. And then when we engage in the ICU, we're at a weaker position of changing the regulations. So what we do then, when we go to these regulations and councils, we try and lobby South Africa's position, looking at Africa's agenda, what is that we want to see in order to transform the ITU. And firstly, the issue of the ITU is linked with the overall UN reform system. You know, this system is not relevant for us. It doesn't work for us anymore. Because things are manufactured like, there's no cell phone that is manufactured in South Africa. We all use Nokia and a number of them that we have. You know, you'll find that these issues like this, your regulation, those countries that have a monopoly of manufacturing and capability, ensure that they monopolize and make us a market consistent. We always buy, we don't have our own industry, our own development. Yeah. So these conferences like this are very much important. That's why they do it after a long time, from 88 to now, much has happened, and much has grown in the economy of technology, and much has been sold to developing countries, but developing countries don't ever say that much. They always buy, and everything gets dumped. Yeah. So these are the debates that happen in the ITUR.
Okay, so South Africa supported that resolution. Along with quite a number of other developing countries. So that was one of the key debates that took place. Internet issues. This is also always a hotly contested terrain. I think from the time of the World Summit on the Information Society, when we looked at the issue of internet governance. So the conference adopted new and revised resolutions on IP-based networks and the role of member states in the management of internationalized domain names, and the ITU's role with regard to internet public policy issues pertaining to the internet and the management of internet resources, including domain names and addresses. For example, one of the decisions they took was that countries shouldn't interfere in the allocation of other countries' top-level country domain names, because there was that concern previously that there were different agencies allocating country code domain names outside of the control of member states. And that's been resolved in South Africa through the establishment of .za, domain name authority. But that was now recognized in the ITU that member states should have control over the country code. But they would know,
no.
What's happening? No, I'm trying to say to you, you must understand what .za, domain name authority, is.
Yes.
Because we all have internet addresses. we all have internet addresses that end with ZA. And there are people that are responsible for controlling the internet. We formed an institution called ZA Domain Name Authority. It's an authority, no one can regulate that deal with the ISPs, whoever provides internet has to, every address has to be listed around there. So it's an authority, I think we are one of the few countries as well in Africa that sells this authority. It's called .ZA Name Authority.
Okay, I think next time let him finish, and then you'll add to what he has left. You'll explain later, so let him just carry on and finish.
Okay.
Thanks.
Then another one of the key issues that was discussed was concerning strengthening the role of the ITU in building confidence and security in the use of ICTs. The language of building confidence and security, that was part of the World Summit on the Information Society language, but it's really referring to cybersecurity issues. So this resolution calls on the ITU to assess and address existing and future threats, cybersecurity threats, in order to build confidence and security in the use of ICTs. I think member states, governments, and the ITU, they have a moral responsibility to ensure that the system of communications globally is safe and secure, because as we build an information society and a knowledge economy, we can't be expecting everybody to participate in that if they do so in an environment which is not secure. So people have to have that confidence in using ICTs. So the role of the ITU within that context was being articulated through this resolution. The ITU was also instructed to facilitate access to tools to assist member states in enhancing confidence and security in the use of ICTs. I should indicate this is also, for some reason, quite controversial within the ITU. There's a sense, I think, from one or two major powers, again, of wanting to limit the role of the ITU in this sector, possibly because they feel it could impede their own interests in the security industry, or maybe because they don't want the ITU to be the structure that does this. They prefer it to be somewhere else within the UN system. But member states, developing countries, do quite like the ITU because they have quite a strong voice there, and they have been able to exercise that authority within the ITU. It is quite a democratic institution, so it's quite popular with member states to be able to deal with a lot of the issues that concern them within the ITU. And obviously, you can't really discuss cybersecurity and ignore the ITU because it's sitting in the middle of the whole international system. Then one of the other resolutions, this one was very important to African countries, and it involved a resolution concerning strengthening the regional presence of the ITU. The ITU has international offices. There was one which has been re-established now in Zimbabwe. And these offices are there to assist member states with technical assistance, with various international meetings and cooperation processes that they can go through. So this resolution was looking at the role of those offices and how to make them stronger. And there were several suggestions. One was to give them more authority to work with other international organizations, for example, finance institutions that are operating within Africa and other international bodies that are operating within Africa, so that they can, and then they can also work with, say, regional member state intergovernmental bodies such as SADC. So it was really looking at that role of the ITU. And they suggested to improve the functioning of these offices by calling on the UN Joint Inspection Team to conduct an assessment of the functioning of those offices. And then that assessment team was to report before the next plenipotentiary conference, before Mexico. And the findings were to be assessed, I think, by the ITU Council, and then presented to the plenipotentiary conference. So that was a key resolution for the African countries. Also because in the telecommunications development sector, there's always a regional program for each of the regions that's developed within that sector, which indicates the priorities for development in ICTs in those regions. So Africa obviously has its own program, which is AU-endorsed, but it's agreed within the World Telecommunications Development Conference that these will be the priorities for development within Africa in the ICT sector. So then those regional offices will play a role in assisting countries accessing technical capacity building programs and so on. And then the last part that we've put in the presentation was about the contributory units of the member states. The conference increased the size of the contributory unit. This is the membership fee, basically, that are payable by member states to the ICU. So one contributory unit used to be 318,000 Swiss francs, and that became 330,000 Swiss francs for the years 2008 to 2011. And member states, as is set out in the Constitution, once they've established the size of the contributory unit, member states are requested to confirm the respective classes of contributions they'll pay. So that's at that time we were paying three, and a decision was taken to increase the number of contributory units from three to four. That was in light of the World Summit on the Information Society outcomes and the election of an African Secretary General and progress that was made in a number of areas that we felt was important. And that's the end of that presentation. So I think, Chairperson, we're available for questions or comments or advice from the committee members.
Thank you very much, members. That was a presentation on the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union. Honorable Khrunova.
Thank you, Chair. Just for clarity,
and like I said when we begin, sir, can you switch off your mic? Like I said, we're going to take comments, questions for clarification. This is an information that as members, we're still going to sit down, look at it, understand it, so that when we rectify ourselves, then we understand.
Yeah. Thank you, Jean. On page 13, this last sentence there, he said the contribution unit. What exactly is it? And you say South Africa's got three, and we are going we must increase it to four. Can you explain a bit more about that? That is something new for me. I do not know exactly what it is, if you don't mind. And then on the executive of the ITU, how many members do we have from South Africa on the executive? Is there any members representing South Africa there, and how many? And then the other thing I'm worried about, maybe it is nothing to do with you, and that is the cable. They laid from Europe to South Africa down the coast, it's on the eastern side of Africa. What is the contribution to this cable from South Africa's side? Is there any money we must pay at this stage? And how far is this project? Is it already finished? Is it in use? And if not, how long will it take before it is getting into using by different countries? And what is the role South Africa played in this whole situation? Thank you.
Thank you, Captain. Just two questions. One is on page 10 of the presentation. I just want to understand, Captain, the second last bullet. Focusing on social projects for underserved areas. I'm looking at this from an international perspective, if I am correct. That's one thing where I have to be correct. And two, the identification process of such area. I'm linking this chapter with this other document, which when quickly going through Mr. Buthelezi, I could sense that this is more of a document prepared then, particularly towards the end of last year, but now for information when I'm going through it, because some of the issues raised here have already been implemented. I'm looking at page 3 of this. When you are talking of the mandate of the branch, I'm linking capacity with the first question. That understanding that South Africa is chairing the African Support Committee, I have a specific attachment to Southern Sudan. What then would be the role of the branch in the renewal of Southern Sudan in particular, where you have, I'm not sure whether I'm going to say it's a newborn country from nowhere, if you are talking of that country, particularly after the announcement of Renato. Then on page 5 of also this document, I understand also, Chairperson, that the extraordinary ministerial meeting of SADC adopted the broadcasting digital migration. It's done, but now just out of interest, how binding is that, with the understanding that presentations by different countries were made to you, and I am not sure of the level of satisfaction with the decision that the extraordinary ministerial meeting took vis-a-vis your own evaluation in terms of your presentations which were made. I deliberately, Chairperson, do not want to mention the particular country, lest I am seen to be lobbying for a particular country.
Okay, maybe also if you can clarify us who attends these conferences. And how do you report back? And on page 9, you've got this cooperation with other. That's the second mandate that says cooperation with other world and regional intergovernmental organizations and NGOs. Maybe if you can tell us those intergovernmental organizations and NGOs and those that are in South Africa, so that we know that definitely the people in our country understand when we talk of ITU, those organizations. And for now that's that. Thanks. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of the questions I think DDG Buthelezi will. Some of the questions my colleague DDG Buthelezi will attend to, but I'll attend to those that I can manage. On the subject of the contributory unit, the contributory unit, what happens in the ITU is countries pay their membership according to an agreed unit. They call that the contributory unit. And then before each plenipotentiary conference, we're supposed to indicate to the secretariat whether whether we intend on changing our contributions, whether we intend increasing them or decreasing them. Then they go through the budgetary process. They have one of the committees of the plenipotentiary conferences dedicated to the budget and financial matters. And then they'll come back to the plenipotentiary conference and say, based on the indications we've received from member states and the work that has to be undertaken by the ITU, we've set the contributory units at this size. But normally they'll bear in mind that countries don't normally like to increase the amount they pay, so normally they wouldn't do that. But on this occasion, they increased the size of the contributory units. You'll find like the big countries will pay 40 contributory units, so that'll be 40 times 330,000 Swiss francs for their membership. I think the US is around that mark. At the last plenipotentiary conference in Mexico, Saudi Arabia increased theirs from 10 to 14, which is quite a big increase. But normally countries will try and maintain what they're providing. We felt that ours was probably slightly on the low side, so we increased ours at that point from 3 to 4. But also because South Africa is one of the key countries in pushing the agenda of the World Summit on the Information Society, and to show strong endorsement to the election of the first African Secretary General of the ITU, who has since been re-elected. He's been very successful. And he considers South Africa, obviously, as a key partner in the work of the ITU. So that was the base of the contributory unit. When I referred earlier to sector members who are from the private sector, their fees are also set in terms of contributory units. I think they pay 1/8 of a contributory unit. It's set out in the Constitution what they have to pay as sector members and associate members, and it relates to the size of the contributory unit. And then least developed countries, obviously, they pay much less. I think they can go down to, they're allowed to pay in half units. But we're not the least developed country. Then on the executive, you represent your country at the point of ITU Council. So when we stand for the council, the Executive Council of the ITU, we stand as South Africa. The election is not for a candidate as such. It's for the country. And then, obviously, you're elected by member states if they believe that you'll serve the interests of member states and the ITU well as a member of that council. From the next stage up, when you look at the other positions, like those of directors or the deputy secretary general or the secretary general, those candidates stand as individuals. Obviously, they come from a particular country, and I don't think anyone has ever stood without having the support of the country that they come from. I don't think that could happen. They wouldn't get very far. But normally, there would be individuals who have built up quite a profile within the work of the ITU or within the international community, as well as having technical expertise from the sector. So often you may find somebody who's at the level of a deputy director within the ITU. That is somebody who is recruited through the advertisement of a employment opportunity by the ITU and became a deputy director, serving one of the elected directors. Later then would be put forward by his country as a potential director and nominated. And then the election process is quite extensive. The first week of the plenipotentiary conference, to describe it to you, it's really, there are a number of issues that have to be attended to through the main plenary and some of the committees. But the activities are really dominated by the elections. Most countries will host receptions. They'll give everybody gifts. You'll find there's a lot of electioneering going on in the first week. I think you can have 4 or 5 receptions on at the same time in the lunch times and in the evenings. You can even have sponsored coffee breaks. So it's a, people really want to get positions on the IGU. It's quite an election that goes on. Everyone circulates information about their candidates or their country's record in the ITU to promote their election. So at the moment we're on the Executive Council. We're looking forward as an international unit to developing the profile of particular people going forward or identifying people who could play a useful role in the long term within the ITU so that maybe one of these days we can put forward a candidate for one of the more senior positions, for one of the elected officials that form part of the secretariat. And then we had a question about social projects for underserviced areas, which is in the mandate of the ITU. From what I know of the work of the ITU, they do have projects often in least developed countries. Obviously, they don't have jurisdiction or a mandate to go into any country without having the consent and cooperating with the authorities of that country. But they often run technical projects within least developed countries. They don't have development funds as such, but they supply expertise. So, for example, if the World Bank had a project, they could do it together with the ITU if it involved the ICT sector. And then the ITU would send technical experts or identify technical experts or source them that could assist in those projects. And we ourselves, for example, we could, there was at one point discussion about having a regional project in ICT for the development of SMEs. We could partner with organizations like the ITU to deliver those. But I think often also they will intervene. They have one of their resolutions deals with what to do in the case of emergencies. You know, when you have, for example, like in Haiti, when the telecommunication system basically collapsed and so on, and then they provide emergency relief with support. They mobilize the international community and provide emergency support and relief to assist in those kind of situations. I think at the moment they're involved in the rebuilding of networks in the Lebanon, and they've done that in other countries as well. So it's those kind of things.
I think on that one, maybe for next time when we meet, if you come with detailed information, because, you know, if you present to us just like this, as is, then we won't actually have an idea of a social project. If I talk to someone who wasn't in this meeting and talk of social projects, it's really going to be difficult for me to explain. So, you know, department brings this piece of document to us. We want us to ratify. We just don't want to ratify something that we don't understand ourselves, just for the sake of ratifying. So I'm requesting that all these questions for clarification that we are giving to you, when you go back, sit down, give us the detailed information. Detailed information on this. Maybe we think, what? We think, then it just doesn't really give us any sense of what is happening. This is not the first conference, the first piece of what? Presentation, or maybe to say the international trade agreement that we must ratify. We've been ratifying. Every time we ratify, we only see you when you come to us to say, come, we want you to please do this as parliament. But after that, then you are gone. So for this one, let's give it really a, you know, we must work on it. We must understand as members of this committee, as members of parliament, We just don't want to ratify. Otherwise, you are standing in front of the people on the screen saying, as the Select Committee, we support, but not knowing what I support, not understanding what I support myself. That's not the issue. So please, when you explain, you must really make it a point that you do. We do understand what you are saying and what you are. It's just today, like I said, it's just information, and you could hear the questions from the members that we really want that information. Okay.
Chairperson, thank you. And I think earlier on the chairperson made mention that part of the presentation must also include areas that will say what will be the implementable within that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We do take what the chairperson is actually saying now, but part of the actually act also, talks about the spin-offs in relation to benefits to the rural community, you know. Maybe we will be able to kind of talk around it in terms of what is the link and what will be the benefit in relation to that. Yeah, I think Didi Ibu tell us has that, you know. We then also start to say the current programs within DOC, how does it also link with the Department of Rural Development to ensure that people in rural communities also get connected. You know? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think our presentation was linked with the Antalya thing. That's why we could not pick up any other thing. But we can respond to the question of what you're saying. The classification of the UN of South Africa, we're not a developing country. We are neither a developed country. We are a category of a country that they are not sure what to do with. We are not even a middle income, because we have characteristics of both the developed and the other developed country. So when these resolutions are passed in the ITU, you notice in the planning report recently, they talk about countries that are developing, and then we are skipped. Immediately, South Africa, if you read the definition, like, no, here they're not talking to us exactly. It means you can't go and beg. But instead, you are seen as a leader in the region that has to facilitate the developing of other countries in the region.
Mm-hmm.
So we have multiple functions. One is the function of developing our own people in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
and the function of developing our own people in the region and the continent. The reason why I'm saying so, if you look at the resolution, that has been done in on the undersea and on under service areas. South Africa has USAS, Universal Service and Access Agent. So we're seen, first of all, to have been established, to have responded to the Information Society agenda on. I'm just going to read here what the resolution says here on development. So we have USASA. USASA's mandate is to deal with underservice areas. The underservice areas, for us as DOC, we link that with the 13 priorities outcomes that we are having. We have developed an ICT and rural development strategy, strictly on ICTs, looking at how we can utilize the post office, how we can develop with the program that is called the ECADAS program. It's almost like CDWs, but looking at ICTs. Strictly on ICTs. We have e-cooperatives programs, looking at training people to run ICT-related companies to provide e-solutions in hospital clinics for government and form themselves as companies, instead of giving tenders to big companies, to give it to those communities for forming e-cooperatives. Having said so, there are quite a number of areas that we identify in the strategy, which I think we have to bring to the community, so that we say as the country how we respond to this issue. We did not wait for the ITU. We are not begging from the ITU, although we contribute in the ITU, but we decided let's go on to. Then after doing, we take the very same lessons, then we go to Malawi, we go to Zambia and say, okay, this is how we've done it, do it. You know, we'll assist, we will give you the technical expertise, the funding you must get, either from donors,
or wherever you get it, but we'll give you the skill. So this is how we respond to universal assets and service. But it becomes very difficult. Like if you look at the resolution on the resolution number 25, recently in Guadalajara, it says creating a mechanism for the purpose of developing suitable and sustainable business model that will result in private sector participation and companies and academic. Part two of it is assisting the determination of appropriate and affordable technology to meet the needs and requirements of rural population. For me, South Africa has been quite advanced because in its overall strategy, from the presidential pronouncement and the ruling party's agenda, is that they look at rural development. Therefore, it responds to this issue. Even before we went to Guadalajara, it was already a priority on rural development. Three, says formulating rural development strategy that takes account to the ICT literacy of rural populations and relevant to their contributions and their needs. Here they say actively assisting member states in rural area funds in trust projects or project finance from the ICT development fund, which we hardly assess, and we have never assessed, otherwise we have not benefited from this fund. And it's twofold. The definition of South Africa's economy comes with other countries. You know. As I said, we're defined very differently, although we have challenges. But they usually say, no. But you guys are better off. Actually, we can actually use this fund to fund Rwanda, to fund Benin, to fund Chad. You are even far much better off than that. If you look at the issues that have been raised on the AU, in the AU, they even gave us infrastructure projects. The president has the infrastructure project in the AU. It's very deliberate because, one, they know we have capability after 2010 and other related. We've wanted the WSSD before World Summit. That's why we're given COP now. They know why we have capability of running major infrastructure projects. We look at the rail, the electricity crisis that we have had and other related issues. We have a mechanism of trying to respond to those issues, which is far better than the rest of the developing countries in Africa. So we've been given this task as well of looking at the rail and road projects, including ICT infrastructure. And commerce is relying on us on those issues. So we usually don't benefit that much instead we give. Even on our membership, what the Honourable Member raised about the point of 1 to 4, we have increased our membership very deliberately because we know the money returns to us in terms of assisting with other countries because we recognize ourselves as at least affording and the rest of the other countries who are not affording. And the more we pay, the more we will stay equally to France or any other country when we are in the country. But if we leave pay, you know, you say, no, shut up, we are not going to vote, we are not putting anything on the table. So it's like in business, you put your money where your mouth is, or your mouth where your money is, kind of in a general. You realize, so let's increase our contribution delivery rate, and on the other side, demand that then the rollout of these development projects and that in under service area goes to specific countries or identify, as you're saying in Southern Sudan. In the very same book, we're called upon as countries to the resolution that talks about assistance and support, resolution number 34. On support of countries in special needs and for rebuilding their telecommunications sector. And here we are called to have bilateral with South Africa with those countries. Among those is Sudan, which we anyway ever had, even before the call of the resolution. It says member states are called to offer possible assistance to support the countries in special needs, either bilateral or through special action of the Union, referred to as above. In any case, in coordination with that action, so they instruct the council to ensure that it goes there. Members assist in the development of those. So it means as we establish Southern Sudan, among the first thing that we need to do is South Africa to send a delegation to go and establish and analyze the infrastructure needs. What do they need? Do they need a post office? Where is it going to be? Do they need telecenters? Do they need, I think South Africa has had telecenters for quite some time. Those things we can assess, the PITs, the public information terminals, things like that will assist them. In rural areas, what kind of things do they have? Fixed lines, just basic fixed lines. Or what are we going to do? Are we going to go on wireless technology? Are we going to use satellites because of the sparseness, because of the deserted nature of Sudan, and all those kind of completely. South Africa has to go in there, and when you go with the rest of the team, with the, as you say, from the ICT perspective, this is the challenge and analysis of the geographic information system that we've gathered in Sudan. This is what they need. If they have to start with ESKG, so if you have to skill them up in building schools, maybe we need e-schools than physical schools. Maybe they will not have the chance of training teachers in time or you. So we'll use satellite information and all those kinds of solutions. So we will be working and we'll come to the committee on what is our role in Sudan. Because we have prioritized it there. And previously we had post-war countries and conflict countries where the problem lies there, which doesn't exist again. So we need to revive it and look at the countries that are in conflict. But we are working with the Sudanese. We have a bilateral, we had some engagement as we're going on with John Garang before he passed away. Our was in that day, if they get liberated. And all those issues need to be put in place in the document to say from the information, communication, and telecommunication, and this is where we are prepared to assist with that. But we will come back. We need to come back to the committee and say, here are the list of the projects that we are doing. This is where they are located in each province. This is having the benefits. And this is what we are planning in our current strategic plan. You know, this is what we plan to roll out, where and how.
We will really appreciate that. Because actually that should be on your list when you come to the committee. You should know that this committee represents provinces. And the first presentation that you bring to the committee on that information, you say, we bring in this act, and then this is what we have done as the or we are planning to do as the department.
Sure.
Yeah, we don't have to dig it.
Sure.
We don't want to dig it. Give us that information as you come. Yeah. Come prepared to us, saying this is the list. This is, you know, so that we don't like. Yes, thanks. Continue.
Okay, yeah, the interesting fact that the Honourable Member raised about the under-TKV, if you remember very well, South Africa was trying to get on the EASY project and the NEPAD project, which never went exactly anywhere. There are cables that have been launched, there's CECOM cables, there's EASY cables, and there are almost 5 or 6 or 7 cables that are either going through Cape Town here or Mthunzini as an end-to-end linking. South Africa tried to participate at AU level. A project that was of a dismal failure. When I say dismal failure, there was never a consensus on the agreement on how business and government are going to work together. So governments that were more even territorial about the infrastructure went on, and then South Africa was left out by time due to the politics of the structure. But infrastructure was South Africa internally has territorial. We have territorial networks. Our role in policy is to ensure that when these undersea cables land, as in how do they reach communities around the coastal areas? It's the agenda that we need. So the challenge that those could be heavy because it doesn't have concurrence. There's no department of communication in any of the provinces. So we rely on the IGRF. This Intergovernment Relations Forum as prescribed by the Act of 2000 of IGR, where which the Minister of Communication has to sit with those respective MECs in each of the provinces to identify infrastructure needs in terms of how this cable are going to be done. But for instance, here in Cape Town, we have not had a direct engagement over how the cable is landing, because we don't control the bylaws, neither do we have a say in that province. We can only say, have a say in terms of the licensing part of the cable through ICAS. The rest of the other issues on how the cable lands resides on that province. It is actually a business between that province and the landing of the cable. But if you look at South Africa in its totality, we need to be generating a national integrated infrastructure ICT plan. That will say, if the cable lands into the how far does it go? Which direction does it take? How do we link on it with the cross-border issues of Mozambique and South Africa? How do they go towards that route?
and how does it go towards the South Coast, towards Eastern Cape, as a, and the one that are in Western Cape, when the system will end, how does it get linked with the territorial infrastructure to link with Eastern Cape from the other side of the world, and how does that can go towards the Northern Cape, and how do we talk with the Namibian government on the Cape that land in Namibia? So we need that kind of infrastructure. But for now, we don't have any infrastructure that the government owns. The government doesn't own any infrastructure, quite frankly. And for any successful country to have a powerful influence on the rollout of ICT infrastructure and rollout of universal assets, we need to own a certain percentage of infrastructure so that you're able to dictate where it goes and how it needs to go. Yeah. And then, a very interesting subject that you and the members are asking on the BDM, this migration issue. You remember earlier on when I opened the meeting instead of the input, I made a point that at times when we don't school ourselves very well over what we are fighting for, as in we miss the point. Even on the Antalya, the general practice in international relations in signing these agreements is that you wait. They are used in a multiple way. One, you can use the ratifications to lobby certain regions on a certain position. That's why we delayed. By the time we went to the ICU in Guadalajara, we knew that we were not ratified, but we used what we were not ratified to ask, what is your position? Okay, we agree with you. Let's track a deal. Are you going to vote us into the council? Then we'll agree with you on the position. When we ratify, we'll ratify based on your position, like you're saying. It's serious gambling and serious business that we have to understand. So you use the ratification process as a way of gambling with the region, either for being voted back into the seat or for a certain position that we want, maybe as Africa. Say, no, you know what, we want this seat. And Asia seems not to be agreeing with us. How to manipulate them? Then the rest of the Africa will come to South Africa and say, you are friends with these guys. Because you have not ratified and they are interested in the issue. So go and convince them. Sometimes to say members should understand the policy that goes with ratification. It's not just signing. We sign with a particular agenda of either messing them up for a particular agenda or being messed up as a say, okay, we can compromise X, Y, Z. Or let's not ratify it and walk away. Because when you sign at the beginning of the immediate after, like if you could sign after Guadalajara over the resolution that they put forth, we may bind ourselves to something. Then when technology changes 5 years down the line, we have to go to the 2014 in the next conference. Might have changed, but we've already locked ourselves in a certain deal. We are not even having a relationship with those people at South Africa anymore. We can't even look at them in the eye. But we've already signed and agreed with them on the first position and ratified and locked ourselves. There's something new coming in, something cheaper, something more relevant that we have gone for as a position in the country. And we are unable to make it. So I'm trying to explain in nutshell, I know I seem to be going around. In fact, I'm going back to the issue of the standard. In the standard, we have signed to Region 1 that will go for TVBT, which is highly used by the European countries. But here we are signing an agreement with BRIC. We have IPSA, relationship with the Brazilians. And we have the South South relationship with the Japanese and the countries in the South and India this way. So when we went to Zambia, there was a debate. South Africa does raise a debate. Although South Africa was leading on the TVBT resolution that it put before its parliament. But South Africa said no, but there's ISTB standard that is already being passed around. We really have to see what it offers. So countries were a bit confused. Most of the countries were relying on South Africa. The decision on the standard was based on what South Africa was going. So we then, I think last year, called for a standard symposium in South Africa, which was very disconcerting to the industry sector. Said, no, we are reviewing the standard. We never reviewed any standard. We never came to Parliament to review any standard. We were still trying to analyze what the ICB is offering. We indeed went to Brazil. We see what is that makes Brazil to try. How can we restore the electronic manufacturing industry in this country? Which is, there's nothing wrong with it, and going and seeing what the other guy is having elsewhere in the world. So where the issue was is how the media projected the mess as this sort of a regime yesterday because of the industry.
business interest in the certain standards that we assign to as South Africa. Meaning, in a nutshell, it's a lesson. Next time we sign, we should know when to sign for, what value, what is the economic imperative, what is the plan. That we are heading forward to, because we'll miss opportunities in technology, in the new technology. So we ended up then calling for the start to be done at certain level. So no, let's wait. There were two serious issues that we had. We had Mozambique that is 6% that are interested in the ICP, translation, and they are going to benefit. Okay, if you look at the spectrum, half of the, and a quarter of the Mozambicans are watching Sarawak television, and the Swazis are watching Sarawak television because of the how we've been to center. So whatever happens in South Africa affects them at the borderline. Similarly, we had Angola, which you are friends to, who are speaking Portuguese as well, where it doesn't the ICP standard. So now, how do we balance the issue of relationship between the two countries that we have a relationship with? That's not too artificial, the one that is close to us. So Mozambique had no choice because we have a financial power and a muscle. They'll always stay back from our crown. Whatever we decide, we'll go for it. Although their preference, given their constituencies and their languages that they are having, would have been ISDP, but they had no choice but to go to what we are. Botswana has changed its position on the PVVP. They wanted ISDP. So when we went to Zambia, Botswana and Angola were the countries that had a reservation and objection to whatever we are clear upon, they are fine if we can go on, but don't prefer to have the standard of their own choice without being binded by the Region 1 agreement of DVBT. And there was also an argument that no, but we initially sort of signed for DVBT. Now the DVBT2. What is the agenda? Are these set of boxes going to be damaged of DVBT that will require us to upgrade to DVB2 or what? What is the issue here? And at one point, are we going to start the country's manifest our own set of boxes that we don't have to buy them? So we'll only buy the chipset, maybe from China or anywhere, but the boxes are set to manufacture to generate local electronic manufacturing. So there were those kind of debates that were quite heated. So we agreed for the majority of countries that gone with DVB-T2, but with reservation, I repeat again, from Angola and Botswana, that they would like to have gone to the ICT standard. And how do we then face the Brazilians on other related matters on ICT after the standard debate? How do we get trusted? How do we go back to Angola and speak to them over other related issues that we have bilateral agreements or on other issues, not only even related to ICT, there are other issues that we have relationship on. So that's where the issue of the standard is. So I'm putting it there to members to understand the debate, the issue, as they were projected.
It's a dead debate.
Yeah, because of it now, we went through all the information that we have managing.
Oh, he's preparing us for the next meeting.
Yeah.
You are preparing us, the deputy is. Thank you. I was saying it's good. Yeah, you are preparing us for the next meeting. So for today, we are coming back because we're not going to finish this today. You can see not all members are here. And some have got bereavement, some are sick. We've just came back from Cuba. So, you know, we will plan another meeting. But you can finish up now.
Okay.
Chairperson, I think you raised a couple of other points we still haven't covered yet. The one question was who attends? I think you're talking about the plenipotentiary conference and how do you report back? I touched earlier on the preparatory process. Normally what happens is we invite different stakeholders. Those would be the sector. So that would be the service providers we have in South Africa and the state-owned enterprises in the sector like Centec and USASA. And we also normally interact with an NGO called SangoNet, and the South African Communications Forum, and other structures like that. We discuss the issues and go through them and prepare our national positions, and then we decide on a delegation within DOC, but the sector, we will invite them to come with us, especially, obviously, ICASA as well. Some of the sectors in South Africa are sector members of the ITU, so they're entitled to go as observers anyway, but we can include them in the national delegation as well. So we go as one South African delegation. Normally we ask the different enterprises to pay their way. I think it is possible for us to, in some cases, pay for other participation, no? Which we can look at in future instances. So those are the people who attend. We normally have a delegation of around, I think it was 20 at the last one there. It's about 20. Yeah. We don't control the size of all the sector participants of their delegations, but only the government's part. Then we try and manage participation through meetings while we're there, because it can be very difficult when often people won't necessarily know how the plenipotentiary works and what their role will be when they're there. So what we try and do is we get people's input in morning meetings, and then we assign people responsibilities where they can contribute or ask them to watch particular debates. Then on the reporting back part, we normally have a report back meeting with the same group of the sector of the delegations. And then, of course, there's the ratification process we go through. But ITU meetings tend to be ongoing. So we find that as we come back and we start discussing the outcomes of this plenipotentiary conference, we're already doing it in the context of preparing for the next World Standardization Assembly or the next World Radio Conference or even the next plenipotentiary conference or council meeting. But I think one of the points you were also making was that I sense that we should be doing more to publicize and bring forward the relevance of the ITU to South Africa. This is an issue which my boss here has often raised, so we're also looking at that. So I think you've reinforced what is already on the agenda. Then you also mentioned about cooperation with other intergovernmental organizations and NGOs in the international context for the ITU. There are a number of international structures they cooperate with. For example, in the area of internet governance, they're supposed to work with and have some cooperation with organizations like ICANN or other UN-based organizations, as well as they work regionally with the regional organizations such as the African Union. They're supposed to cooperate with, or the African Development Bank, if they're doing work in the African context. But they're really looking at the international NGOs rather than specifically development-based NGOs that are working within countries, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, the challenge here with the bodies is interest on NGOs, especially when you go to these ITU conferences. What happens is that people organize themselves into an association. They go there and vehemently differ with the government in front of these other governments in the ITU. So what we're trying to do is to structure and then control the engagement. When you go to the ITU, we only have one spokesperson. On particular issues, when we go there, we don't go as Telecom or MTN or what is it. When you are in the South African delegation, you are a South African. So you articulate the government's position, and that's how we stand. And the size of the delegation is a tactic and a technique. The Americans go with almost 40. And the people that go in there are almost 40 years experience. The person will tell you, no, I've been an engineer dealing with the issues of the ITUR, meaning regulations, for 40 years. So I've been doing this work for 40 years. So they invest. So as South Africa, we come in very late
in our democracy, but we are seen and taken very high. So how do we make up for the lost time and stuff like that? So it's the question that you ask about how many people we employ in the ITU. We don't have. We only have one person that we who is in Paris that attend the ITU issues. And I'm still writing a document. I think I'll give it to you of how South Africa has to deploy the people in the ITU. Because if we have to take ourselves seriously, after 6 years of democracy, the Mandela era has passed, and the other era has passed again. By time, they don't no longer give us that high support. That's why when we went to the ITU, for the first time, South Africa was not an AU endorsed. We competed outside. African countries did not vote us. So we lobbied on our own. What we do, we separate the delegation into five or six blocks. And they go and lobby the agents with their assignment. Even if you come from Vodacom or anywhere else, you bring the guarantee of reciprocity from the agents. All these countries, Bali, and all these countries, India, whatever, they are yours. You come with the vote. Let me take another person and say three or four of you, you do this other block and all of you. And then 3 days before the vote, then we position our issues, then we influence the agenda in that way. But unfortunately, despite leading the Africa desk, when I say leading the Africa desk, we provide a secretariat for the Africa group in the ITU. Africa is not voted. We voted by 101 countries, only a few of them, only three or four, voted out of the 157 countries. So we voted by 101, but most of them were not from Africa. So it tells us something over how we, one, compose our delegation, two, we position our issues. So for NGOs, there are few NGOs in the country that understand ICTs. It's only Sangonet. The rest are their industry bodies. They have specific interests, and which we always have to control. We always have to try and align and bring issues of national pride, national identity in it, to say that whatever we lose, we always. May not like what the government is doing, yeah, but when we are here, one voice in the ITU. So that's usually the challenge that we have. And secondly, in communicating back to the country, as I said, the only structure that DOC has is that IGRF, which is not wide enough, quite frankly. So probably we need a certain mechanism of communicating back the resolutions, what does it mean to development in the country, and how far we do go. I'm always actually feeling very agitated about the absence of us giving a report back to the country. As we don't have a national report back modality. They say, okay, this is where we went, this is how we went, and these were the issues, and this is what it means to the country. And that's an anomaly, quite frankly. That is quite beyond our control. The way this government is structured itself, the national department, it doesn't have provincial competence. It becomes very, very difficult to reach to provinces. Unless maybe we send... Because it's always been my frustration of how do we report back, even on controversial issues. In fact, some of the positions that we take, I usually ask the team, is this the country position or industry position with yourself as DOC? what is this that we are bringing forth? Which is a very important question that we need to ask ourselves. So we really need skills around the ITU to deploy. People who are interested in ICTs, who are engineers and all of you, that need to take abroad so that they position them in the ITU. It takes 4 to 6 or 7 years to groom someone else in the ITU issue so that you position them as a director. They must be familiar with the environment, hang around, be involved in a number of meetings around the innovation, become a voice that's not really present. Then we are able to put that name. Our name is this one for the director position. That's how we position ourselves, you know. But I think we are far from this. It's out of the real world. We run where we can. The rest we leave to the midst of the political debate in the ITU. Thank you.
I think from today, can you switch off your mic? I think from today, you'll start as South Africa to plan ahead for this, and also for those NGOs that are not familiar with the ITU, you'll be able to bring them on board, maybe to have a plan of saying we're going to have a workshop for even those who are not aware to bring them on board to understand, not only have Sangonet, you know, to be the only NGO, but it's just a comment. We will talk when we come back. Let me thank you, members. I think you still have something. Let me thank you for the information. It's thought provoking. So when we come back, we will discuss further, and then we will see where we take this to. Are you finished with the portfolio committee? Have they adopted it? Oh, last year. Why is it only coming to us now?
It was 86 late, I think. Yeah, last year late.
No, understood. I think the committee secretary is bailing you out. Yeah, so thanks very much. Until we meet again. Members, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks a lot, Chairperson, for allowing us an opportunity to share the issue you experienced and other leaders. We'll try and gather a
presentation. Yes. And I think the problem that you were reducing from.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they give two to each country. So one is 15 is the one around the country, yeah. But,
okay.
But we'll send them the soft copy.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll give you the indicative where they are.
Yes.
We'll publish them, send it. Yeah. That's that. We'll give you the details to the members, the whole family. Yeah.